This is MFG Out Loud. Courageous conversations about sales and marketing for today's manufacturers. With your hosts, Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore.
Hey, Trailblazers. Thanks for joining us today on this episode. This is number 15. Grow your building material sales now. Stop waiting and start creating the new normal. We have a special guest today I'm super excited about, my good friend Mark Mitchell. I met him several years ago through, wait for it, LinkedIn, my favorite. And we've cultivated a great friendship ever since and had many change the world conversations. And so this is a real treat for him to be joining us today. He, for those of you who don't know him, which I'm sure there are just a few, not many, but he's known as the Wizard of Building Materials Sales and Marketing. He's also the author of the industry Bible, Building Materials Channel Marketing, which you can see next to him. And you can order that on his website. 30 years of experience. So he's no, kindergartner when it comes to all of this. He's helped more than 100 building materials companies get amazing results, and not just by sales and marketing efforts alone, but by first really getting to the heart of their customer and what they really need. And I think that distinguishes him from the rest of the pack. And you've got to check out, I have to give you a plug, and I'm not getting paid for this. Check out his Wizard Summit. It happens twice a year now. And I mean this genuinely. He just keeps upping the game. And I have talked to so many people who they were just so glad that they spent the money. They said it was worth way more than what they paid. And they were just so glad that they went or that they sent their people. So check it out. You need to go to his website, which is seethewizard.com. It's WHIZARD.com. So thank you, Mark, for hanging out with us today. And I know this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to this. And thanks for that nice, wonderful introduction. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. We like to just jump right in, and we wanted to talk about, you and I have had several conversations about this recently, talking about building materials companies as well as all other manufacturers who are waiting for the new normal, right? Instead of really focusing on growing their sales now, really focusing on creating the new normal. I think you would agree with this, and this is part of the conversations we've had. The majority of manufacturers, and especially those in the building material space, they're really comfortable with incremental improvements and based on what's worked in the past. And I think we can all agree that COVID-19 has changed everything on top of what already had begun to change, right? Like, I think we can all agree too. The truth is builders, architects, contractors, dealers, distributors, they're all changing even before this happened. And so are the ways that they communicate and the way that we need to serve them. And I say serve before sell, because I think it's an important distinction. So waiting is going to leave them in the dust or out of business. So I figured we'd start there and just kind of see where this goes.
Great. Great. But the thing that I notice is, this is the building materials industry is kind of an industry that is behind. It's not like an Apple or Nike, and it's 10 years behind the rest of the world. And it's very slow and stubborn to change for many reasons. And my, your concern, I guess I'd say, is that I'll say, and I don't know where to draw this line, and I'm going to be generous and say 50% of the people realize the world has changed and they have to change. Mm-hmm. And 50% of the people, like when we talk about the new normal, I think there's 50% at least who are waiting for the old normal to return. Right. Okay. It's like they mentally can't get their hands around, if I don't physically go meet with you face to face and show you this or convince you of this or whatever, okay, I can't make a sale. Okay. And I don't know what you guys have noticed, but I'm I'm seeing there was already a trend where customers who are overworked and understaffed, so their most valuable commodity they have is their time. And so when you say, I want to come meet with you, they kind of feel like, okay, there's going to be 10 minutes worth of information that I need, but I, to be polite and culturally and all this other stuff, I'm going to have to devote 60 to 90 minutes to meeting with you. Okay. And so I'm doing this to be a nice guy. You're doing this to be a nice person. All that, we're all nice, 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 you know, and where I really just need, the greatest thing you could do for me is I have 10 minutes of information I need. How can you most effectively get that to me and not waste your time and drive 4 hours to come maybe meet with me? Okay. When we could do it over the phone or a Zoom call or a combination of different things. And there will still be time for face-to-face meetings, but I think it is going to rapidly decline, where it's the customer is going to say, hey, don't waste your time or money coming see me. Okay. Like this is my, I like your product, or I have this question, get me this answer. That's what I need. And that's a big thing. I don't know what you guys are seeing, but that's what I kind of see. They're kind of stuck, but they're going to be, when we come out of this and customers start to refuse to have a meeting with them, not because they don't like their product or they have no interest, but because I don't want to, I can't afford the time. I think it's just my projection. And what do you guys think?
I appreciate your perspective on that, because I think, manufacturers under a large umbrella fall into that model. Half are recognized something's going to change, the other half are under a rock waiting for it to go back. I liked one of your previous posts where you talked about the super sales call, because this whole situation is, we're now, you can't just show up, you can't just knock on the door. I'm finding that it's actually easier to get those 10 or 15 minute increments with a Zoom call and everything else. People are more accustomed to it. But like you said in your article, if you've only got 15 minutes, what are you going to say? What are you going to do? And I think that the presence of that constraint is such a huge opportunity. I'd love to hear you expand on that a little bit more.
Wow,
I think that's so important.
You know, it's funny. I never thought about how you just described it. the power of the constraint. And so many times, you know, in other issues of life, I think about, you know, like, okay, so you're dealing with these constraints. Okay. Now be creative within that. Okay. And sometimes how that actually helps you be better, more effective.
Right. You
know, like I remember early in my career when I had an advertising agency, and the more I constrained the designer, the better they were.
Yeah.
Okay? The more that they could choose any of 1,000 typefaces, any, you know, all of this stuff, it was a train wreck, you know? And yeah. So what, there's a positive and a negative potential to this. Okay. Right. So that article was about a salesperson who called me and said, Mark, I have 15 minutes to meet with, I think it was 15 lumber dealers in Michigan. Okay. Because I paid $350 to be a sponsor. I get 15 minutes at a table with these guys, like speed dating. Okay. What should I do with that time? And my thing was, the last thing you should do is talk about your product or your company. You should talk all about them and their problems. And I sent him a list of like 6 subjects. Like, wow, how do you compete with big boxes? Wow, how do you compete with builders that are more and more demanding, you know, and negotiating rebates, and they want you not just to deliver once a day, but twice a day, or whatever their expectations are, they just keep rising, you know? And how do you find the people to work for you that are knowledgeable, and, you know, and just kind of went through, asked these questions. And I checked with him later that day, and he's like, Mark, after 90 minutes, I had to leave because I had another appointment. Okay. And in the end, he said, like, there were 15 people there. Each of them could buy $1 million of our product. 3 of them were current customers. 3 other guys handed me their business card and said, please contact me. Anybody that understands our business the way you do, we should be doing business with.
Wow.
Now, they knew what product he sold, but he didn't once say we started in 1853 and, we're greener than the other guy and, and we install faster and any of that stuff, right? Yeah. He just was all about them. Yeah. And I think too frequently, that's probably the biggest thing I always am preaching to people is, the more you can know about the customer, the better you will do. You get lost in thinking you have to know more about the product than anybody. You can pick up the phone and call your technical director and ask them a question about the perm rating. You don't need to, know everything. You're the sales guy, yeah. And the more you know about the customer, the more the customer is going to, they're also going to open up and tell you things that you were like, I couldn't imagine. He just opened up and told me all these things I never would have even asked him because I think he would not have told me, So that's what I hopefully people will use that discipline to, first of all, establish their expertise and their credibility by showing knowledge of the customer. Then the customer will come to them with questions about the product, the company, the service levels, lead times, whatever the issues are.
Right. Well, and don't you think that, I think that that is essential on the sales side, but as you know, I am a marketer first,
right?
And we're constantly doing the same thing that you're doing. We're preaching that empathy has to be your starting point. And if marketing isn't showing empathy, isn't telling people, I see you, I understand you, which supports what the salespeople are doing, if they're going about this in the way that you're describing, then it all works so well together. So what do you say to manufacturers who are reticent, who just, I get the feeling that there's so much fear in doing something different than the way that they've always marketed before, to adopt this model and really support their salespeople, I think in a new and way more effective way, because people don't make decisions rationally like everyone thinks. That's 5% of the time. 95% of the time it's based on emotion.
So right.
Wouldn't it make sense to buy into this?
It makes all the sense in the world. I look at, once again, that in the building materials industry, it's probably because they have not had to be great marketers. Okay, now if you're Anderson by Renewal by Anderson, you got to be a great marketer, okay? But if you're selling faucets, if you're selling drywall, many other, there's 700 window manufacturers, you can get by, by not being a great marketer in building materials. And so we have two problems I see. One is there's a disconnect between sales and marketing.
Yep.
So you have a marketing department that is doing something not related to sales. I mean, I've had literally salespeople say, Mark, did you see this brochure they just sent me? It was like, who did this? I can't show this to a customer. They'll laugh at me. Okay. Obviously this person has no idea what an architect does. Okay. Right. But here's this fancy new brochure they're so proud of. Right. But did they once run it by me? Did they once even, meet with an architect? Okay. No, they dreamed this up and it's really creative and it'll probably win some award and everybody will be excited, but it won't do anything for sales. The other problem that I see is sales, for the most part, has kind of been an in-house art studio for many building material companies. So the head of sales says, oh, we need a new sample. We need a new brochure. We need a new booth for the trade show. We need a new website. And he directs the marketing people what to do, right? So they're not given a problem. Like, we would like to grow our sales with architects. This is what we've done in the past. This is our problems right now. Marketing department, what do you think we should do? That discussion doesn't happen often enough. Too often they jump to the tactic, like new website, that grow sales, new website, yep, a Salesforce or a HubSpot or whatever it is, and they jump to this thing, go to the AIA show and have a big booth, right? Whatever it is, they jump to a tactic and then they go with that. And sure, doing something is usually better than doing nothing, okay? But it amazes me how, and so I think the what's going to happen speed. Once again, the coronavirus, what I think is going to take what the building material industry would have been 5 years of change, that they would have been pulled along by their customers and other influences and competitors. They're going to be forced to make that change in 12 months. Yep. And so part of it is more effective marketing. And now we have marketing that's never been so measurable. In the past, it was always anecdotal, you know, oh, we won an award. Oh, we got 20 likes. Oh, you know, the president's wife thinks it's really great, you know, or whatever. It's all anecdotal bullshit, you know, and now it's like, nope. Like, what's your web traffic? Okay. How many inquiries, how many inquiries turned into whatever the sales process is. Right. And in the end, how many sales did we make that we can give credit to this marketing program, where marketing has also, to me, been guilty of avoiding accountability. It's much easier to have somebody like or not like something than to have a number that you're measured by. Yeah. Right? So everything is success in marketing. I've never met a marketing person that goes, boy, did we ever blow that one? That was the dumbest idea we've ever done. Okay. I mean, I know a few people that will talk that way, but, and it's like, you know, if I were the CEO, you know, I'd go into my marketing department and say every week, tell me something where you failed. Tell me something where you blew it, you know, because if you're not blowing it once in a while, you're not pushing it hard enough.
Right.
It's like you can go to the website today and, you know, like years ago when I first started, like direct mail was really big. And so, you know, if you were dealing with a client that really relied on direct mail, they understood like this mailing that we send out gets a 3.25% response rate, right? Now, can you beat that, right? So here's, we want you to go develop some concepts that are designed to beat that. And we're going to test them. We're going to mail them to 10,000 people before we mail them to 1 million, right? And we're going to see what they do. Now, we're counting on most of your ideas are not going to beat the 3.25, okay? Like, but we know, I don't know if it's 1 out of 3, 1 out of 5, somewhere in there, you're going to hit on something that none of us expected that takes it to 3.35, okay, per, you know, response rate. And so you look at the website today, you can go in and change the headline on your website in 5 minutes. So why don't people go in and be changing the headline of the website all the time just to kind of beat? I know what this is our default. This is our baseline template that, like, and we want to beat this. We're never trying to beat anything. It's like, oh, the website's done. That's good. Okay. You know, that was a big project. You know, maybe in 2 years we'll do it again or something. It's a living, breathing thing that you should be working on and changing every day. You should be trying emails that utterly fail, okay? And, you know, trying crazy subject lines and crazy ideas with the intent of, like, finding that magic thing that your competition hasn't figured out. But, no, we just do safe stuff.
Yeah.
You know, HubSpot says every Thursday at 10 a.m., send an email out. There's five of them. Here's the five subjects. I go, okay, well, that means every other HubSpot customer is doing what you're doing. So do you want to do that? Really? Do you think all these emails arrive at 10 a.m. on Thursday and they all have this in the subject line? You know, good luck with that, you know?
Well, and what do you say to building materials companies and manufacturers who are, because I think we've all seen a lot of this right now, put everything on hold.
Oh.
Their marketing on hold until we know how this is going to pan out. So effectively, any initiatives, right, that they would have been working on right now that would be rolling out this fall are not going to be ready until the end of the year or the beginning of next year.
Right.
So I've seen a lot of companies who are saying nothing instead of continuing to connect with their audience. And I'm talking, you know, through social media platforms, who are still, if they are speaking, they're still speaking with a neutral voice instead of a non-neutral voice, right? Instead of really leading, being a thought leader, showing their personality, showing empathy, addressing what's actually happening in our world, instead of, shh, let's just wait it out. and we'll see. You know, just don't say anything because we don't know what to say. What do you say to those companies?
Well, what so first of all, is we have a lot of companies that are driven by financial people.
Right.
So it's either the CEO used to be the CFO, or the CEO reports to an investor.
Right.
Okay. And so financial people, by their very nature, tend to be conservative, risk averse.
Right.
And they to me seldom have a vision. Okay. They can look at a spreadsheet all day long. And so I find that these people they're equating this to past recessions, right? So I've been through several recessions, and on one hand, you can say they're the same, but on the other hand, everyone is different. What caused it, what the effect is, how long it lasts, who benefit. There's companies that benefit in a recession. There's companies that are punished in a recession, right? And so they kind of make a blanket thing. This is going to be a recession, so we have to buckle down because by December 31st, I have to deliver my numbers no matter what. So I'd rather sandbag and play it safe. And to your point earlier, they'll be happy if I have this tiny little incremental bump, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, if I grow 1% or 2%, I'm good, right? And if the recession is so bad that I'm not going to grow, if I still can make the profit margin, then I'm still good. I still have my job. I'm, you know, I get a bonus or whatever. So that's too often drives them. And I think what has been surprising is every company I've talked to, first of all, in April, they said, oh my God, Mark, March was better than we had originally planned. March was better than before coronavirus, our goal for March, we exceeded that. Then I check with them in May and they're like, oh my gosh, April's not so bad either. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And in some cases, April's great again. We had another great month. Like, what's going on? Right. Now, there are some companies that are, you know, seeing, you know, they're taking a 10-15% knock because of commercial projects that have been stopped or put on hold. But they're sitting there going, I'm still 85% of my business, right? And, you know, where I thought, I didn't know. I thought I'm going to be at 50%. Where am I going to be, right? So I think I'm seeing people starting to come out of the woodwork where in December and January, I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be a great year. I had so many major clients that were interested in nice engagements. And then this came along, you know, that all of a sudden, shoop, everything is either call me in 2 months or the boss has just killed everything. Well, now I'm back on where like 3 times a week, I'm getting some sort of inquiry about, I want to talk to you, right? And they're from different and new companies. And so I'm seeing people, there's a group of people realizing that there's plenty of opportunity here. Like if you're in home improvement, oh my gosh, I can't imagine what the home improvement industry is going to do. Because all of these people stuck up in their homes and looking every day at the problems, things they hate about their house and what they want to change, you know? And when I talk to builders are, they're not seeing this as being bad. You know, they're right now, let's say they're selling half the number of homes that they would have been originally selling, but they're happy they're selling half as many. They had a 9-month backlog of, if you bought a home from me today, it'll be 9 months till I hand you the keys. Well, this is an opportunity for me to now work through that backlog. Okay. And so now I can say to people, if you sign, I can have your home in 4 months or 5 or 6, not 9. Right. So in the end of the year, I think they're looking at like, yeah, you know, we'll have a setback, but this is not going to be bad, you know, because the people that this has hurt our least fortunate people more than people that have any degree of success. People with any degree of success have not been harmed by this. And the wealthier you are, the more it's actually you've benefited from it. Right. And so I think if like there's certain sectors, like if you have you know, you sell doors to hotels, you're probably going to be hurting for a while. You know, you better figure out how to sell doors to something else. Okay. Yeah. We don't know what's going to happen with office buildings. Okay. But home offices, are you kidding me? You know, the remodeling projects, you know, for that. And so I think companies are starting to wake up, and part of what's waking them up, and I'm talking about manufacturers, is their distributors, their contractors, their builders are saying, hey, I still need products. I'm still doing stuff, you know, wake up, hello, you know, and I think that's kind of like, they don't know what to do with it, and they don't know what the new reality will be. So I'm really curious to see when we come out of this, and I've sat there now for 3 months and not had any Salesforce T&E expense, and my sales have not gone down. Am I going to go, what do I need salespeople? Do I need them to be traveling? What do I need? I mean, it's, you know, there's going to be some big questions that will be great to be asked, you know? So I don't know if I got off on a tangent there. Did I answer your question?
I think a lot of things are going to change, but I think the point of, you know, what we're talking about today is that you don't have to wait. You can, there are so many things that you can do right now. Get creative. And I think it starts with what you said before. And I remember that article that you wrote, is just to start with the customer, you know, start with that is the key, I think, to all of this. If you understand and get creative with them based on what they need and how they need you to communicate right now, you're going to win.
Oh, I agree. The other point, Allison, is, you know, when you say I want to start, as you know, we all know, well, it takes time. Mm-hmm. To even if you said I want a brand new website, okay, well, great. I mean, that's 3 months, 6 months, in some cases a year. You know, I mean, I want to implement a marketing automation program or whatever I want to do. It's not like a switch.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it takes time. So you're sitting here. It's now what, June 4th or 3rd? You know, and so you said, okay, we're going to go today. What are you really looking at? September? I mean, you know, you're not looking at July 15th, probably, right? You know. So if you've got a new product, if you've got a new way of selling, you're going into a new market, you want to win back some old customers, whatever it is, you know, the there's this built in at least probably 6 weeks lag time, right? And, you know, people, you know, they think, well, we'll just wait, you know, like the worst case, to your point, is, okay, well, we're not going to do anything until 2021. Okay. So that means they're not even going to start anything development until January when they have new budgets and new funding, right? They're not going to start in September and invest so that they're ready to hit the ground running in January. No, you know, you know,
they're going to wait and see. I think that wait and see, at least from my experience, and I think you two would agree, is that, you know, we always tell clients, if the conversation is happening with or without you, the business is happening with or without you.
Exactly.
Either be part of, or hello, lead the conversation, or somebody else will. So if right. You choose to pull back and remain quiet because you're going to play it safe and you're just not sure and you want to be cautious, I'm not suggesting that people have to spend bazillions of dollars. This isn't.
They don't.
No. It's about getting creative and it's about substance. So like you said, if you really understand your customers and if you're being mindful of them, you're constantly altering what you're doing. So you've got this main strategy, but you're constantly making little modifications along the way, right? Because it's fluid, it's flowing. You're not ever just stuck doing one thing one way. And you're also measuring along the way, like you pointed out, and you and I have talked about that a number of times, is you've got to be mindful of, is this working? How is this working? Is it successful? Did it fail? Hey, great. At least we tried that. We won't do that.
And we learned.
Exactly. So, and looking at the time, we have just about 3 minutes left. So I know before we close, is there anything else that you want to add or a thought?
Well, I think one final point, and that is that I see, like whenever I'm working with a company, I'm looking and saying, okay, there's so many things that you can do today that cost literally nothing, right? So if you're not taking advantage of those, okay, like let's do that first. And then if you have money for trade shows or more samples, or if you, you know, want to run some ads or whatever, you know, however you want to spend money, okay, you know, but if you're first spending money and then, but not doing the free stuff, you know, so an example is certainly social media. Like if you don't have, if you're not, your company and every customer facing employee is not extremely active on LinkedIn, okay, you are wasting an opportunity. You don't get a bill from LinkedIn to put a post. You don't get a bill to make a friend. You don't get a bill to say congratulations to an architect, okay? That it's just take, it's time, right? The same thing is like content. So if, you know, every one of your, you have employees who understand, for example, with your type of product, what are the five biggest mistakes you see customers make? Okay? If you would just take and have somebody write that, like 1200 words of here's the five biggest mistakes that people make when choosing Windows or whatever it is, right? And then you put that, you know, as a blog post, okay? Google's going to say, thank you. You've provided some helpful, you've helped our business because we got a better answer now to these questions. We're going to put you at the top of this page. And guess what? We're not charging you anything. And guess what? It's going to, depending on how you write it, 5 years from now, people will still be coming to this. And guess what? When they come to that, they then come to your website, right? You know, and so, you know, doing like, you know, well thought out and executed email programs, you know, well thought out and executed calls to action, like to saying to somebody, you can download this report on five biggest mistakes, and it doesn't cost you anything to put that little button on your website, and they download it and tell you who they are. And so that's, and when I go to companies, like, you know, if I'd gone last fall to a company and said we should be doing these five things, they go, yeah, we know when we get more money, then we'll do that. I'm like, you spent $200,000 to go to the AIA show, right? And have this fancy booth, and you got 150 leads, which I guarantee you none of them are going to turn into a sale. And that's a wise use of money. Help me understand. I'm talking about spending maybe 50 grand, you know, to, you know, do, you know, train your people in social media and do some content and SEO and that stuff. You know, it's like, are you kidding me?
The corollary to that is just like you were saying, everybody wants to meet the architect. Are you sure that's who you should be talking to in the first place?
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I, like more and more, like I'm saying to people, if you're good at it, great. If you're not good at it, okay, rather than playing second fiddle, you go be the owner. You go call on the owner, who's the boss of the architect, okay?
Yeah. Right.
Or call on the contractors, right?
Right.
And
right.
And to me, to the point, like if I was selling, you know, doors and my market was hotels or a good market for me, I would make sure I knew more about the hotel industry than any other door rep.
Yeah.
Like I just know what's the occupancy rate, what are the challenges they're facing today. And where most companies go, well, we sell doors and we sell them to, yeah, hotels, but hospitals and university, we sell them to anybody. Right. And it's kind of like, so what do you got to say for me? Right. Yeah. Well, we have doors. What, how many do you need? What color you want? You know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Then you're competing on price at that point.
Right.
You've got nothing to add. Yeah.
No, right. And so I just am always getting people to say, if there's a type of building that is a best fit for you, what is that? And focus on that. It's not that you avoid other sales, but, you know, be known as the most knowledgeable person about doors and hotels in the world.
Yeah.
It would not be hard to do, trust me, because nobody else is limiting, focusing that way, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the other benefit of being in the industry that we're all in and have been in for so long is nobody bothers us at cocktail parties for advice, right?
That's true.
Hey, I'm in manufacturing.
That's true. Bye.
Yeah. Well, look at the time.
That's true.
Free shrimp.
Yeah. So. But anyway, this has been great, and I look forward to you guys. Let me know next time you want to do this, and if you have subject ideas or you want some suggestions, I'll be happy to help any way I can.
It'd be awesome.
Appreciate that. And you let us know too, anytime, if you have something that's on your mind or something you see in the,
got it.
You go, we need to talk about this and we need to get it out there.
Yep.
to just give me a shout out.
Okay, great. We'll do.
Awesome.
Hey, so thank you so much, Mark, for spending this time with us. I foresee many more episodes with you as a guest, because I know we have a lot of topics that we could cover to help manufacturers really grow their sales and I think really leave a bigger mark on the industry. And so, as always, we'd like to thank you who are listening and watching, and say if you're not already subscribed, please do so. You can do that at mfgoutloud.com. And I think I will let Ray go ahead and take us out.
And remember, everybody, please keep manufacturing out loud. We need you. And thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks again, Mark.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to MFG Out Loud with Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore. You can subscribe and find show notes at mfgoutloud.com.